Welcome to another edition of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And today we're doing the at least the second band that we've ever done that contains an adjective in their name. Has it just been only two? There's got to be more, right? I'm looking here. I mean, you couldn't really say Spice Girls or looking through here. Yeah, I think this is the second one. Mighty Mighty Boss Tones being the first one. Now we're moving on to the Fabulous Thunderbirds. Los Thunderbirds.
I don't think the Rollers counted, does it?
No. What would be the adjective? Bay.
Rollers. Bay City.
No, it's three nouns right there. Bay, City, Rollers.
And there's a Blues, which is
a noun.
Spice and Traveler.
And Girls.
Yeah, Spice,
right?
Girls, yeah.
Right, all nouns. Anyway, the Fabulous Thunderbirds is who we're talking about on today's episode of Soundography. This is a good one for me because I think it totally fits for me in what Soundography is all about. You know, we could argue that ELO, we could name half a dozen or more songs going into it. Like, all right, yeah, there's a bunch of stuff that we know. Garth Brooks, you know, we could have named a few songs. Level 42, we could have named a few songs.
What's this talk? You know, mouse in your pocket for level 42?
Okay, I could have named a few songs. Come on, you would have been able to do Something About You and...
That's it.
That's it? Okay.
Yes, I swear to you, that's it. And let's throw the wheel on the other car now. And how many Mushroomhead songs did you know before we did that?
Zero. Yeah. But that's the thing. And I don't think it's a matter of knowing none of their songs doesn't count as knowing one of their songs and nothing else. And I think that's kind of the thing. Cause neither of us could name a single Thomas Kalnacki song before we started doing that.
I thoroughly enjoyed that. That's the most fun I've had of quite a few episodes.
But prior to this week, if you told me, all right, Brian, name a Fabulous Thunderbird song, I would have been able to name exactly two, and it's Tough Enough and Wrap It Up. Those are the only two I knew, and they came from the same album.
And I would have done better than that just because of my history in college and my love of blues and harmonica playing.
Sure. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into it here. The Fabulous Thunderbirds, really kind of one guy is the
Thunderbird, and the rest of them just flock around him.
He's the only Fabulous Thunderbirds. All the other Thunderbirds are less than fabulous.
Oh, I don't know. Jimmy Vaughn. Let's not knock Jimmy Vaughn.
Well, no. And I'm not knocking their abilities. I'm more just saying like their tenure with the band. Yes.
And we thought ELO had a lot of lineup changes.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. Are we going to go through all these? Because there are a lot. Let's do it really quick.
Okay.
So Kim Wilson is the main dude. He's the only member that has been consistent throughout the entire history of the band. And I was amazed to see that these guys started in 1979, or at least released their first album in 1979. I would not have guessed that this is a close to 40-year-old band that we had here. He plays harmonica and also does the vocals. He's the voice you know from the Fabulous Thunderbirds. Other members, we mentioned Jimmy Vaughn, Keith Ferguson, Mike Buck, Preston Hubbard, Fran Christina, Duke Robillard, Doug Bangham, Kid Ramone, Willie Campbell, Gene Taylor, Jimmy Bott, Steve Hodges, Troy Gagne, Rodney James Weber, Nick Curran, Kirk Fletcher, Johnny Muller, Randy Bermudez, Jay Moeller, Rob Stupka, Kevin Anker, Steve Gomez, and Wes Watkins. There's a lot.
Yeah.
a lot of members of the band that have come and gone. And this band feels like it's the type where you can have members that come and go like that.
Yeah.
I think anyway. It feels like as long as you've got a consistent house party feel, backyard barbecue party feel, then you can get by with a lot. At least that's kind of what I equate the sound to. And this is
the kind of barbecue where they're putting the barbecue sauce on with a mop on a giant slab of rib and they've been smoking them for 2 days. And right. I mean, this is not just my backyard. This is a Texas-style backyard barbecue.
Yes, yes. But it sounds like you would agree with me as far as like their what their listing venue.
Yeah, very much so. I'm going to spill the beans a little early. I think that, we usually do the statistics and general notes.
Yeah.
These guys have been around for almost 40 years. And they are the definition of a blue collar band. They just do.
Yeah.
They've had only a couple of top 10 hits, but those hits have been loved. They've shown up of a bunch of soundtracks. They just do. They're just the epitome of that kind of blue collar. Everyone's going to know something, but no one's going to know a ton about us.
Sure. That is a good way to describe it. All right. So, started out in the Austin blues scene where they performed for several years. That actually got them their contract with Chrysalis Records, and then they signed with Epic, and then in 2011 they switched over to Severn Records.
Chrysalis also is the label that had Huey Lewis,
which perfectly coincides with these guys. I mean, obviously not just because of the harmonica, but that is a very consistent kind of sound to them. But also, I mean, just the general feel of the band.
Yeah.
You'd see these guys in a bar. You you wouldn't stop having your conversation completely, but you wouldn't be completely laser focused on the band for the entire duration of their show, I think.
Yeah.
Clear mix of Texas blues with, of course, the harmonica laden swamp blues. They took their inspiration from Slim Harpo and Lazy Lester, both of whom the Thunderbirds would end up covering on various projects. The first two albums had Jimmy Vaughn on guitar, and both albums sold those small numbers were printed about 3,000 units each. And both are regarded as significant blues recordings now.
As they should be.
They are, and they're for sure. Again, kind of jumping the gun on how I feel about these guys, I think they are a great example of a band that does one thing, but they do it extremely, extremely well. And you don't want to see them veer. Like if the T-Birds were to release an album of more metal rock and roll. Well, I wasn't going to go quite that extreme, but like metal style rock and roll. It just wouldn't feel right, obviously. Any other genre for these guys, I don't think would feel right. But blues, this kind of mix of blues and rock just seems to be perfect for them.
It just dawned on me with both of these guys and with ZZ Top being so equated with Texas. I'm surprised we never saw them cross paths or like Kim Wilson do something with Gibbons.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, that's funny. Well, you didn't have the beard for it. But that's a really good point.
Player, beards really get in the way.
It really does seem like you would have seen some sort of collaboration or mention of one band and the other. Like a ZZ Top tour where the T-Birds are opening for them seems totally logical, expected. But when we were doing the ZZ Top show, never even came up as a connection there. Girls Go Wild, their first album, released in 1979. You can find a couple editions out there that contain some bonus tracks. Include songs like Look What You Done, Please Don't Lie to Me, and Things I Forgot to Do.
It seems as if when I was doing the research on this in 2000, there were some reissues, and a lot of the reissues ended up with, you know, some live tracks or some bonus stuff kind of tacked on to the end of each reissue in 2000.
I would totally believe that. Yeah, for sure. And they do sprinkle in, you know, covers every once in a while, like Mark Deck is a Johnny Vincent tune, Full-Time Lover, Rich Woman. I'm just looking through the song listing here. But the bonus tracks, you know, you get a few things added onto that.
I have to tell you, the harmonica work on She's Tough makes me envious of his tone and skills. He's, you know, I land more in the by way of Huey Lewis into the John Popper camp.
Yeah.
And the way he plays is so different, and I wish I was able to do it, and I wish I'd been able to do it when I was playing professionally. She's rough and tough.
And that's to up the
But it just makes me salivate and kind of worship and hate him at the same time.
Totally can see that, because that's the first thing I was thinking of when I was listening to this, is it's absolutely your bailiwick of the harmonica blues, kind of thing. So I love that. They followed that album up with What's the Word in 1980. Sold poorly at first, but the 2000 reissue does contain some extra live tracks. This is actually where you see the first appearance of one of their songs, which is a cover, but they do it so well. And it's been a favorite song of mine for a while, but You Ain't Nothing But Fine. I'm trying to remember if it's Dave Edmunds or Nick Lowe that does a great cover of this song and fits it right into that perfect blues rockabilly hybrid. It's really, really good. Next album is Butt Rockin'. What? This brought them closer.
What a perfect title for an album for them, though.
I don't know what it's trying to say.
Because
like
when you go see them, you're going to be rocking and shaking your butt.
Okay. I didn't know if it meant like, you know,
it's
chair
not like
dancing.
Like when you have gas.
I was thinking like I'm sitting in my chair doing a little butt rocking, you know, to the music. I'm not going to get up and dance, but I'm doing some butt rocking.
I think they're thinking more large scale than sitting in your chair.
And if you've got butt rocking, you need some more roughage in your diet.
Yes, it's true.
Just saying. This brought the band closer to their rhythm and blues sounds. They also added some piano and brass to the sound of the band. They quickly became the favorites of fellow musicians. They opened for the Rolling Stones and Eric Clapton, and the critics liked them, but the record still didn't sell well.
We ain't going to heaven no how. I'm ready to burn, baby. Right here and now. Oh, I dig those crazy clothes. Let me feel those fish that hole.
Yeah, it's weird though, because the more they added brass, the more they sounded like the Blues Brothers.
Oh, totally. Yeah, and I mean, they even do, I guess it's not the Can't Turn Me Loose, but there's a song that they do that's a super Chicago blues song that is at the end of one of their albums. Shoot, it's Antone's Place, I think is what it's called.
Yeah, I think it's one of the millions of songs I added to my playlist.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good.
Because I have way too many.
They are, you know, that is the Chicago blues kind of sound, the Blues Brothers and stuff. Follow that up in 1982 with T-Bird Rhythm, which combined covers and original tunes on the same album, a little bit more so than the previous albums.
This album was a lot thinner sounding, in my opinion, than the other previous ones. And it kind of stands out even in the catalog is having a different, like, acoustical profile in comparison to the other albums. It was just a strange, It stood out. It's kind of a, hey, this was not engineered and mixed by the same group of people.
No, I noticed that as well. And this, it's funny because this one actually was produced by Nick Lowe. And kind of had that feel to it, but that really thin production, that almost compressed kind of production to it. It also is the first time you see them using the enough with the ENUFF, the Can't Tear It Up Enough song that they lead.
The tough TUFF, they seem to really like that kind of stuff.
They do. But
UFF stuff.
Exactly. But as soon as, boy, they so totally start doing it from this point on. Like every album seems to have some sort of reference to uff that uff spelling. It's O-U-G-H. How? After the release of this album, they were dropped from Chrysalis Records. They didn't have a contract for 4 years until their next album. They continued to play concerts all over the U.S. during this time, and they were also featured on Santana's Havana Moon album the year after T-Bird Rhythm in 1983.
And that's an interesting mix for me to think that they were playing with Santana, and they weren't playing with, like, ZZ Top.
Right. Right. No, it is a surprising. It's not as far a jump as there could have been other bands out there.
Yeah.
But because Santana's stuff does fit with that blues. It's a more soul guitar kind of thing, but you can overlay that with this stuff. And yeah, I think
I'm
it works really
well.
I'm not
saying it's a bad mix. I'm just saying there are things that seem to be next door neighbors that they could have used.
Right. Right. You know, maybe there was some bad blood between them and ZZ Top. Who knows?
They stole their car.
They took the keys. So 4 years after, like you said, no contract. 1986, they signed with Epic and released the album Tough Enough. This is the big one. This is the album that everybody knows as kind of their breakthrough album. There was the single, the title track was hugely popular, not just on the radio, their only top 40 hit, but it was also featured in the movies Gung Ho and Tough Guys. It was super, super popular. The second single from the album, Wrap It Up, peaked at number 50. The album went gold in many countries and certified platinum in the U.S. That song was also, Wrap It Up, was also covered by the Eurythmics, if I remember correctly.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a weird one to cover, but
the Eurythmics got it back when Marilyn Manson covered Sweet Dreams.
Right. See how you like it? let's see. The classic 1987 film Hot Pursuit used their music as well. And they used the song Twisted Off for the film Light of Day. Yeah, the film with Michael J. Fox and Joan Jett consuming massive amounts of cocaine.
Okay. Just so you know, I meant to put quotes around classic film.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were just going to gloss right over that.
I don't think. Oh, the Hot Pursuit.
Yeah.
You know, I was using classic in the vein of 1987.
I wanted it to have quotes around it, and I forgot. Sorry.
That's funny.
Have you guys decided if you're going to film Sack Light of Day or yet or not? Because
we will as soon as it comes.
That's one that just based on the cast alone you need to do.
Oh, totally. Totally. Yeah. And it's one of those things. I think we did Secret of My Success, and it was kind of like that era of Michael J. Fox in the 80s where they were just trying to put him in everything. Like Teen Wolf, let's do the sensitive thing there, and let's do the, you know, the drama. I guess Doc Hollywood was a little bit later, but Light of Day, his serious role as brother and sister rock and rollers and doing drugs in New York and blah, blah, blah. Anyway. They also appeared on Married with Children a number of times. Do you know, I never saw them on there. Did they appear as themselves
they played the music. I don't know if, I think every time like Al Bundy would say something crass and kind of innuendo laden, he'd stick his hand in the front of his pants and they'd start playing Tough Enough or something.
Okay.
That's kind of what I think. I don't know all the particulars, but that's kind of what I feel what they would have done.
That's hilarious. I love that. So they followed that up the very next year with an album called Hot Number. And this one did not do very well. For a follow-up, it just didn't live up. Fell off the charts really, really quickly. I'm trying to look back here. Stand Back, Hot Number, Wasted Tears. A couple covers on there. It Comes to Me Naturally and How Do You Spell Love? But
well, according to them, it's L-U-V.
Of course it is. You know, there was no uff stuff on this album.
Which is probably why it didn't do
as well. That's why it didn't do well, exactly.
They called it Hot Number Uff.
Right. In 1989, they finally came back to that sort of with Powerful Stuff. It's a little bit of a reach. The title track actually got used on the soundtrack to the movie Cocktail, the Tom Cruise movie Cocktail, and that's kind of what helped the album become a little bit of a success. There was a long period of lineup changes, though, at this point. All those names that I went through at the beginning. A lot of those people coming through, and Jimmy Vaughn left to do the duo project with his brother, and then after his brother Stevie Ray Vaughan's death, he worked on a solo career.
I think that they were kind of trying to be the Kenny Loggins of the blues scene with as many movies as they were doing.
all the soundtracks.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, maybe. I mean, you know, if you get that's the question. You're a band, you're doing well, you've released a couple albums, you get tapped to do soundtracks. Do you just immediately accept it, or do you say, no, we feel like that's kind of selling out? And I think it's different. You know, you could answer that question in the vein of the 80s and early 90s, but I think it's even a different thing these days.
Yeah, the soundtracks don't carry the same kind of I guess power is a
clout
in the clout. Cause if you got into a soundtrack in the 80s, 90s, you were going to get noticed and you're going to get a lot of extra sales and people checking out your album.
Totally. Yeah. And even the big soundtrack albums that have come out are big because of the older stuff that they're pulling in, like Guardians of the Galaxy and the sequel, for example, great examples of this. Yep. But a lot of the stuff that you find on soundtracks, like the Fast and the Furious stuff, always seems to tout, oh, we got a Pitbull track and, you know, a new Flo Rida track or something like that. That's primarily what you see on soundtrack, promoting soundtracks these days is hip hop stuff. Mm-hmm. Way more than you see, check out the new track by The Killers on the soundtrack of this film, or it's going to be pop and hip hop.
Yeah, it seems as if it almost has like a negative connotation with some of the artists that it didn't have before.
Right. Yeah. So let's see. After Powerful Stuff, they released the album Walk That Walk, Talk That Talk 2 years later. It was their first album without Jimmy Vaughn, and the album marked a return to the more straight-ahead sound and abandoned the overly commercial production that the previous albums had. Again, you know, not I'm looking at the listing, but no real big standouts for me. I'm not sure when we get to the playlist, if there might be a couple of things on here, because that was kind of what it was for me. There was nothing on these that I didn't enjoy. But after a while, some of those albums kind of in the middle between Tough Enough and I would say Painted On felt a little blues wallpapery to me. Again, not that I didn't enjoy them, but there wasn't a lot of variation.
Yeah, and I totally get that, and I kind of felt the same way. I found a little bit more variation in a couple, and we'll talk about that as we go. But right. Yeah, I totally understand where you're coming from. If you're not used to listening for the nuances, or if it's just it's just more of the same after a while.
Yeah,
I get it. It's everybody has that stuff that for a while it's cool, and then you're like, it's like pizza. It's a law of diminishing returns.
Right, right, exactly.
The first couple pieces of pizza are the best ever. Middle two pieces, good, but not great. And by the time you're done with the pizza, you don't want to have another pizza again for a long time. Which goes, well, to, Joey, go which goes to Joey Image's thought that every pizza can be a personal pizza if you just commit yourself.
That's good. Why does that remind me of the Yogi Berra quote about no, go ahead and cut that pizza into quarters for me, because I usually only eat three or four pieces anyway. Anyway, I'm sure I'm butchering the quote, but yeah. Something like that. After Walk That Walk and Talk That Talk, Kim Wilson decided to do some solo projects, and released Tiger Man, Reel 11, Take 1 in 93.
He released Tiger Man, the song that I want everyone to go listen to, and I'll probably put
it in.
Reel 11, Take 1. That's a great piece of music.
Really? I didn't do any solo stuff. I went straight through the catalog, but didn't do any of the solo stuff.
The only reason I know is because I own it.
Ah, okay.
And gotcha. It's really, really good.
Really?
Yeah. I thoroughly enjoy this album, but that Reel 11 Take 1 is absolutely amazing.
I'm going to totally check that out when we're done here, because I like his voice and I like the style, so I want to check out the kind of the other things that they did as part of this. The next year, he released another solo album called That's Life. And then the next year, back to the Fabulous Thunderbirds, they released the album Roll the Dice. Pretty good album, right? Roll of the Dice. I'm looking through the track list. No uffs in this one, but there is the cover of Zippity Doodah, which is really good.
Some people really hate. Some stuff online about this. There's a thick line of people who love it or people who really don't.
Wow.
And I fall on the I like it side a lot.
Yeah, I liked it too.
There's a thick line of hate and love on that one.
That's interesting. No, I as you know, hey, as a cover fan, I'm maybe I have a predilection towards stuff like that, but I have no complaints whatsoever on that.
I think they did a good job of bringing their style into a song that we all know. I mean, it's part of our DNA to know this song.
For sure. Yeah.
And they added the Thunderbird flavor to it without taking away that feeling that we already know that we love this song and it's part of our genetic code.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. The next year they released a collection of B-sides and rarities and outtakes and stuff like that from the first four albums called Different Tacos. By the way, can I just say I really do like their design, their style on their albums. With the exception of that weird second album that looks like collage Mac paint kind of thing, the rest of their albums have a very true to the 50s I don't know, like the who's the actor, I can't think of the damn kid's name, James Dean kind of fight movie poster quality. Yeah. To them. I really do like that.
Yeah, they it's funny, I feel like they could have been either the band they are or could have slid the other direction into a very solid rockabilly band.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, sure.
With pompadours and, you know, leather pants and high waters and white socks and penny loafers. I could have seen that happen super easily.
Definitely. All right. So after that B-sides album, they released the album High Water in 1997. This was actually a studio project with Kim Wilson, Steve Jordan, and Danny Korchmar. They issued it as a Fabulous Thunderbirds album, but the only people you hear on the album are Steve Jordan, Danny Korchmar, and Kim Wilson.
Yeah.
You don't get anybody else on here. Still continuing that kind of Texas blues sound. Again, it's straight ahead. You know what you're going to get when you get a Fabulous Thunderbirds album. Big long wait until the next Fabulous Thunderbirds album. And I'm sorry, I skipped a bunch of stuff here. Let's come back to that. On February 16,000, the Fabulous Thunderbirds, first band ever broadcast on the internet using high-def cameras. They released that on the DVD invitation only. It's one of the first high-res multi-track recordings of a live concert event, and they released the companion CD, just called Live, in 2001. Kim Wilson also released a solo album this year in 1997 called My Blues. 2 years later, he released, 3 years later, he released Smoke and Joint, 2001, and 2003, the solo album Looking for Trouble.
Looks like Kim might be a workaholic.
I think so, right? Just taking a break from the T-Birds and doing some solo albums. Which
sounds just like the T-Birds, because frankly, he is the T-Birds.
It's kind of like the Dandy Elfman solo albums, you know? very much sound like Oingo Boingo, but in that case, it was because of most of the band. Oingo Boingo was on the album with them. Yeah. T-Birds came back in 2005 with an album called Painted On. And I feel like this is where they kind of had a slight shift in their sound, a very refreshing shift in their sound for me. I felt like this was they got out of the blues wallpaper sound.
Well, I think it's had to do with their production style and the fact they brought in some new players.
They did, yeah. Not only a couple of guest vocalists, Rachel Nagy and Nick Curran, but also production. Here's another band that we should have named earlier, Los Lobos. Yeah. Steve Berlin of Los Lobos produced the album. Another blues Texas / Mexico, Mexicana blues band, Los Lobos. 2006, you guessed it, Kim Wilson released another solo album.
By the way, when Los Lobos releases a blues album, it's just called the Los Azules.
is that what it is?
For the blues.
Yeah. I get that. Azules. Yes. Kim Wilson's solo album, My Blues Sessions, Kim's Mix, Volume 1. A few years later, they sort of released an album called Thunderbirds. This was in 2009, and you could really only get it by attending their tour. You could only buy it there. You could probably buy used copies online now, of course, but that was initially the only way you could get that. They followed that up a few years later, 4 years later, in 2013, with On the Verge. They started slowing down. Even Kim Wilson started slowing down in his production. 2013, On the Verge. They added Mark Ford, the guitar player from the Black Crowes, for this release. And a lot of different styles and genres that they have on this album, and feelings, different feels from song to song.
Yeah, and I really liked the variety. It felt like they were really kind of, hey, we're old mid now. We've been doing this forever. Let's try something else.
Totally. Yeah, these last three albums, or four albums, three, because I didn't hear the concert-only album, but Painted On the Verge, and then the most recent album, I felt like were the strongest stuff and the stuff that I enjoyed the most because of that that variety. But On the Verge is considered to be one of their most concise and focused albums of their career, and I can see that.
Well, it also feels like they spent the most time. I mean, a lot of these other songs, they're on other albums, they sound great, and they're fun, and they're loose. But I feel like they went in, they laid them all down in like an afternoon, and
yes,
walked out.
Right.
Which is
they had fun. Another show to go do or something, right? Yeah, they were going to go do...
Kim had a solo album to go record.
Right, exactly. Then last year, 2016, they released the album Strong Like That, which I really, really enjoyed. I was really... might even be the album I enjoyed the most from them was Strong Like That. I feel like it's a very deep, rich album.
Yeah, I really enjoyed On the Verge. I enjoyed On the Verge as much as I enjoyed the first couple. And then the middle part I know them and I appreciate them.
Yeah.
But the middle part's the middle part. And then you get to this kind of The Verge and Strong Like That are these kind of meaty, very mature albums.
Right. Yeah, for sure. All right. any statistics that we want to hit while we're, you mentioned one of them already.
Yeah. They had number one with, Tough Enough. They showed up on a bunch of movies. Like I said, they're just this blue collar band that just works. Really is Kim that it kind of drives this blue collar Thunderbird around, picking up musicians and churning out albums.
Right. For sure. All right, well, let's get to what I think is going to be, and I think what we both think is going to be a very obvious selection, but there's Stairway to Heaven songs. So you're at the Fabulous. You're at Billy's Back Shack, or what is it? It's going to be something like that, the Roadhouse. Oh, these guys are totally playing a place called the Roadhouse.
Oh, yeah.
Probably multiple places called the Roadhouse. And hello, we're the Fabulous Thunderbirds. The echo of the place, and Patrick Swayze is trying to decide when to be nice and when to not be nice, and they fire up their instruments. What songs are you, like the lead in there?
Yeah.
What songs are you expecting that you're going to hear at this show?
My votes are for Tough Enough, Wrap It Up, She's Tough, and Scratch My Back.
Yeah,
or the one that we always seem to forget. Harmonica solo.
There's got to be. Did we even notice that when we did Blues Traveler that there had to be a song, like a listing in there called Harmonica
I don't
solo.
Know if we noticed it or didn't look or what, but we were really young in the show. So,
yeah.
Thanks to ELO and Rush, we now look for this kind of stuff.
For blank solo, right.
Yeah.
I'm even going to throw in You Ain't Nothing But Fine on there because it's. It was featured on a bunch of their early albums. It seemed like, you know, they'd throw that in a different version of it, or maybe a compilation version or something like that.
Okay.
But it's a pretty obvious choice. Number one on the list is, of course, their big single, Tough Enough, followed by their second biggest single, Wrap It Up.
I'm not a Thunderbirds genius,
right?
But you could see that coming down the road.
Totally. Let's see.
I think the only reason Harmonica solo probably might not be one or two is because a lot of their instrumental pieces where he's featured, quote unquote, as a harmonica soloist, mm-hmm. they get named.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm
looking through it. Actually, there's one in here called Long Harmonica Solo. I think somebody offering their editorial perspective on setlist.fm. And Kim's Blues in E Kim's Boogie in E and Instrumental, both included in the tied for 15th place.
Yeah. With our experiences with Rush and ELO, where cello solo made the top 10.
Sure. It's funny there. They don't have a lot of, they have a lot of listings for concerts, but not a lot of set list listings. They've been performing, there are set lists in here from, or not set lists, but reported concerts in here from all the way back 1978, but not a lot of songs. Not as many songs listed. For example, you know, when I talked about the statistics of Tough Enough, there was only 26 recorded set lists that contain that. Yet there's probably 200 concerts listed here on the site. So for whatever reason, they just didn't document the full set list as much as they said, yeah, they performed it, you know, Larry's.
And also, it could be the people who were chronicling these concerts might not know all the songs that these guys are playing. I mean, they do a lot of obscure blues covers, and they're doing a lot of things that are, you know, you kind of have to be in the blues know to know some of these songs and to know it. And if you aren't in that batch, you're just going to list it as Blues Boogie in A and move on.
Right. Yeah, totally. By the way, Tough Enough, performed by Fabulous Thunderbirds, one of four artists that have played the song Tough Enough in concert, and Kim Wilson as a solo artist doesn't count. The other artists listed here, and two of them are the same kind of thing, but Foo Fighters apparently did Tough Enough in concert once.
That makes sense. They cover Darling Nikki and Jerry Rafferty.
They do. So that could be apparently. Winona and the Judds, each with a couple of performances.
Winona and the Judds? So, is that like a band?
Winona Judd solo.
Oh, yeah, I know. I'm just kidding.
Two separate listings. Winona solo and with the Judds performing Tough Enough.
That's like James Hetfield and the Metallicas.
The Metallicas, sure. One of my favorites. All right.
I have to give Kim credit for that, though. It is not Kim Wilson and the Thunderbirds. It is just the Fabulous Thunderbirds. At least he brings himself into the band.
Yes, which is true to that 50s style of like, all right, we're the Glimmer Notes, or we're the Sensations, or we're the
Glimmer Notes.
Glimmer Notes. Just making up names of bands. I might use that one, the Glimmer Notes.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Let's get to our set list. Set lists. This is where we pick five or more songs.
Hammond, we're looking at you.
That's right. That we would add to a typical greatest hits listing. You're going to find a couple greatest hits tracks on mine. I'm just going to say it right now.
But before we get to the list, though, tell everybody the disclaimer that I put at the top of your list. So that everyone knows that I'm not being weird.
It's funny you took it off, but it said, Brian, if there are any songs that you were going to pick until you saw them in my list, go ahead and take them because I have way too many. Something along the lines of that.
Yeah. Well, the reason I took it off is because after you said, no, I'm good. I was like, okay.
Yeah, totally. No, and I, all the songs I picked, I looked on yours. I'm like, no, he didn't have any of those on here. So I did just fine.
Okay.
All right. Number one, this is from the Rhythm album. How Do You Spell Love? It felt like a good starting point for these guys. It's the third or fourth album, T-Bird Rhythm, but it seemed like probably the best description, the best way to do it is this is a good song to define the palette of colors you're going to hear or see, if I'm continuing the metaphor, in a Fabulous Thunderbirds painting. It's right up there.
Yeah.
Second one, and maybe it is because of that great Eurythmics cover, is Wrap It Up from the album Tough Enough. I know it's the greatest hits, and heck, it's the second most played song in their concerts, but... But I love it. And I think it was because of the video. For whatever reason, I'm remembering the music video, and I don't remember what it was about the music video that I liked. So I need to go back and watch it again. But I was hooked from that point. And I think that's actually what made me pick up the album in the 80s was the song Wrap It Up. Love Speaks Louder Than Words, which is from Painted On, one of the more recent albums. I picked this one because after albums of hearing Kim Wilson's voice, which is perfectly adequate and solid, there was a female lead vocalist in this one, not just a backing vocalist, but like a female lead vocalist. It was like, oh, wow, this is great. Am I hearing a Fabulous Thunderbirds album? I love this. And it's a really, really good song.
She plays the Fabulous Thunder Chicks.
Is it? Thunderbirds, baby, they're birds. Number four on my list, and again, because of the cover aspect of it, especially because of the Nick Lowe, Dave Edmonds connection, it is You Ain't Nothing But Fine. It's one of those songs that if I had a rockabilly band or a blues band, we would absolutely cover the song because it's such a fun rocker. It totally is. And then finally is their cover of I Know I'm Losing You. This is from their album Strong Like That. And it is such the album begins with this song. And it's, I don't know, it just feels like it's got so much depth right from the beginning. And the Temptations, by the way, the first band to do that. But it just begins with so much depth and keyboard and I think harmonica in that one. But it just feels like such a great way to begin the album.
All right, I'm just going to read through mine and be done because the list could go on all day. No, I'm just kidding.
Sure. It's going to be like the list of who's been in the band. Well, there's this, and then there's this, and then there's this.
Yeah, my list of Dream Theater songs is actually going to be shorter than this one.
Well, it's because they only have five. They're just 48 minutes long each.
All right, so my first one is Scratch My Back. And the reason I did it is because they were able to get a good chicken clucking rhythm out of a guitar.
Yeah.
And also his harmonica sound on this one is just so awesome. I know he's just using a microphone and harmonica and maybe an amp that's overcranked a little bit, but oh my gosh, I'm so envious of the way he gets his tone. I just drool over it.
And isn't it funny that it's the guitar doing the chicken scratch sound? Usually it is the harmonica, like it's a, you know.
Yeah.
But that's great.
Yeah. And then my next one is Low Down Woman from What's the Word? It's such a classic 12-bar topic. Low down woman won't cook me nothing to eat. All she wanna do is walk the street. She got weight like a devil, moved like a snake. Nothing can stop her. When she don't make it, she's a low. 12-bar groove, 12-bar rhythm, and again, the harmonica is just the butter on the toast. It's just so good.
Wow, well said.
I picked In Orbit from Butt Rockin'. I know this is an instrumental, and it's going to be really hard to find a sample of it that kind of... drop in, but I'm going to do my darndest, and I'm happy about that. And I like In Orbit. I like it a lot.
Do you tend to shy away from instrumentals, or you kind of defended the instrumental on this? And I don't feel like instrumentals need any defense.
The only time I defend them is when we're doing show stuff, because when I'm trying to edit pieces in, it's really hard to find a clip in an instrumental to get the point across okay. when we're doing the editing of the show. As far as liking it, I'd send anyone to the instrumental. But as far mm-hmm. as the purposes of the show, I shy away from that gotcha. Typically because it's sure. it's easier to drop in a chorus and or a pre-chorus or a nice verse instead of just random instrumental noise.
Sure, sure.
I think the only time I purposely dropped in an instrumental section of a vocal song was when we did the rap album, and I could not find a straight out of Locash clip that didn't have just an obscene amount of swearing in it. And I just found the last little piece of it that was mostly instrumental. Number four is Wild Cherry from Painted On. This is another great example of how to write a perfect blues song. It's just straight up and down, exactly what you expect when you hear someone say, "Hey, I got a blues song."
What am I to do? And it's all, and it's all because of you. You gotta go. Yes, you gotta go.
I picked Stand Back for number five from Hot Number. This could have easily been a Blues Brothers tune. In fact, I kept thinking of it as a Blues Brothers tune as I listened to it. I even double checked to see if they played it at one point.
Really? Yeah, because it feels like it would be.
Yeah, it is a greatest hit. I don't care.
Stand back. Let me make my way. Stand back. Listen to what I say. Stepping up in life, you got to help yourself. That don't mean you have to step on no one else. Go for it, man. You got nothing to lose. But don't
right.
So there's that.
Good. Good. As we shouldn't.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
And then number six, my bonus, is Roller Coaster from Walk That Walk. I maybe could have skipped one of the instrumental tracks, but I really do love this song. And it's just a great version of, I mean, it's just great. I love, it's hard. It was so hard for me to pick songs, Brian. I could have had 15.
I could see that because it is right in your wheelhouse. You
it's
know, this
weird
is totally,
too, when you think about what I talk about, it's Mushroomhead, Dream Theater, and now the Fabulous Thunderbirds. It's strange.
And Blues Traveler there as
and
well.
Blues Traveler. Yeah. It's just, it's a weird, the walking around in my musical head is kind of creepy sometimes.
Well, do you think that, I mean, I'd much rather know people that have a variety like that as opposed to, yeah, I like the Beatles and I like pretty much each of the Beatles solo stuff and that's pretty much it.
Yeah. Oh, and also
maybe the Dave Clark Five and that's about it.
And we haven't even talked about like, you know, my true fascination with someone like Michael Hedges and
oh, sure,
stuff like that. I mean, Blue Man Group, those kind of things.
And your Chapman Stick people.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a wide eclectic group, but it's a very eclectic walk through the music closet that is my brain.
Right.
First time up, then I'm down. You're dragging my heart around. You've got me on a roller coaster. You've got me on a roller coaster. Love and affection, my.
And then my next bonus track, making track number seven of my list, is Lonely Highway from On the Verge. And it's just so funky. It is a funky blues tune. And as far as that concise kind of directed kind of piece of music we talked about when we actually discussed the album, this fits right in there. And it's a great example of them as mature musicians.
And this is one of their more recent albums, which is interesting. I was looking at kind of the lineup. I mean, you've only got a couple here that are since 2000, the Painted On track and then the On the Verge track. And that speaks to being like the true fan. That's kind of watched them evolve over time.
Yeah. And it was hard. I probably could have picked a song or two from every album,
uh-huh.
but we would still be talking, and that, that probably right. wouldn't be good for the show.
A 13-song playlist. No, no, no. It's all right. Very good. Well, that that's great. And hopefully, you know, we've given people a place to jump in. There's been a couple different Greatest Hits albums, and I'll link to, I think, The Essential.
Yeah.
Yeah, like great. You and I agree on it then. Yeah. Cool. So that's the one we'll link to. That's a really, really good one. And couple that with the stuff you're hearing in this episode, of course, the Spotify playlist, which you can find over at soundography.com. Listen to that and the Greatest Hits, and you'll be fine, fine, fine. Get it? And
also, there are a couple of people who, or a couple of the songs on our thing, on our list, that the album is not on Spotify for whatever reason, whatever licensing right. issue. So that's why I don't feel guilty about having seven, is because there are a couple that just weren't on there.
They won't appear on the list. Sure. Well, there you go. That's a solution to the problem.
That's right. Hammond just overachieves on his blues, and we have, still have a full playlist.
You get 10% more with Hammond.
when we did level 42, all honesty, those last two were your bonuses. I just happened to have them in my list.
Right. I could have easily put them in my list, and be, you know, we're going to get to some stuff, soon in shows, at least maybe next season, where it's going to be really hard for me to nail down tracks to just five for sure.
Oh, yeah. I have a feeling we're going to be all in that boat as we go further into this.
Now, next week, though, I don't think we're going to have a problem keeping it to five or six. It's a great band, solid band, Toad the Wet Sprocket. And, you know, if you only know Toad because of
Ocean,
Walk on the Ocean, yeah. right? Walk on the Ocean.
And to be honest with you, so this morning while we were prepping to do the show, I actually clicked on the Spotify to see what kind of Toad options there were, just so we could kind of know.
Toad options. It sounds like, you know, a fancy French restaurant a subheading on their menu.
Shea legs. Toad options.
Right, exactly.
It's a ZZ Top run place. <Is
it? laughs> Nice legs. I get it. Very well done, sir. Yeah. Yes.
But I was clicking on, and there are like three songs at the top of the Spotify page, and I'm like, oh, sure. These are Toad again. I thought maybe the 80s just, or the 90s just booped these songs out.
Spewed out these melanges of
that's actually decade. Something that the show has done for me is because, like with ELO, there were a few songs that I just thought the 70s pooped out,
and that's funny.
I really didn't realize that Ocean, and there are like two others that I recognized as being big hits, and like, oh, this is Toad? No way.
That's funny. Well, cool. Well, I'm looking forward to that. I'm trying to look back and see, other than wow, looking through the list, Leonard Cohen, Weird Al, and Garth Brooks, the only bands we've done that I've seen in concert, and that'll change next week with Toad the Wet Sprocket.
Oh, wow. I love the fact that Garth Brooks is one of the ones you've seen in concert.
I know. It's like, dang it, why couldn't it be INXS or the Pet Shop Boys or Duran Duran? No, why does it have to be Garth?
So I can say I've seen Blues Traveler. I almost saw Iron Maiden, but that got canceled because of Ozzy Osbourne's wife.
Sharon!
I saw ZZ Top. And I've seen the Posies and Mushroom Head.
Wow. And no doubt you've seen Mushroom Head at least twice, right?
I think I'm on my fourth time with them.
It's amazing you can still hear me talking to you.
Huh?
Exactly. So tune in next week for Toad the Wet Sprocket. Until then, get in touch with us. We love to hear your feedback. We really, really do. We read every email you send to us, and 90% of the time we respond to you, to every email you send in. Email us at soundographypodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. We like those too. We respond to you there. The Soundography is where you can follow us on Twitter. Everything else, just soundography.com. You'll find this episode, previous episodes, as well as our Spotify playlist, an Amazon link to where you can buy the Greatest Hits album, the aforementioned Essential Greatest Hits album. as well as support us on our Patreon. You can do that by going to patreon.com/soundography, and please do that. As a matter of fact, we've got another listener-sponsored episode coming up pretty soon. We'll talk about that in a couple weeks. So stick around for that. But if you want to sponsor an episode, if you want to tell us who to listen to, Patreon is the way to do that. Just go to patreon.com, look for Soundography, and we'll give you all the details on how to do that. Leave us reviews wherever you want to leave us reviews, iTunes or just feedback on our website, whatever. And that's going to do it. That is going to wrap it up. Get it? Wrap it up.
Oh, we'll that take just it. About covers it.
I almost said that, but I'm not going to. That is going to do it for this episode. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brandon, but thanking you for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
Part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.